If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
In business, there's no room for guesswork. Every shipment matters. Every deadline counts. When you're trying to keep operations running smoothly, the last thing you need is uncertainty. That's why reliability is at the core of USPS Ground Advantage. From the moment your package is first scanned in, it moves through a secure nationwide network, aiding in a timely and accurate delivery. You get near real-time tracking so you can keep up with your shipments. And with affordable upfront pricing, there are no hidden fees or surprise surcharges to throw off your cost sheets. It all adds up to predictable deliveries you can depend on. Because knowing your logistics are handled lets you focus on everything else. Your customers, your team, and the future you're building. Visit usps.com/groundadvantage to start shipping with confidence. USPS, official shipping sponsor of the NHL.
Hello and welcome to this edition of The Bullpen. As always, I am James Ryan. With me is Tom Chavarria. If you're on YouTube, sorry, I don't really know how to change the intro video, so you'll just get a preview of Tom and I just tinkering around for the whole duration of that. Shout out to Nomad Scott. He messaged me on Twitter after our show 2 weeks ago because we took a week off. I was at the rodeo last week. But we always do the tagline at the end of the show, number one veteran-run Texans podcast in the stratosphere, universe, wherever it is. And Nomad Scott messaged me and requested on YouTube that we put it in the horizontal format so that he can do a bit more passive listening if he wants to. I guess it was a rewind, because if you're live vertical, you can't go back to the beginning. So you have to catch it when it starts. And sometimes people are busy. Sometimes they can't catch it when it starts. So here we are. Tom, how are you doing today?
I'm really good. I know Houston sports fans aren't really good. Right now, they're like on pins and needles because, you know, the Cougs are our only hope. It's been a bad couple days, a bad probably week if you want to go that far back, you know, just in general. Today, opening day, you know, Stros, everybody's excited. Here we go. Everybody's healthy, and they didn't come out so hot. Day before, probably one of the worst collapses of a basketball team of any form, NBA or Euro basket or anything. Rockets lose a tough one, and they've lost a couple of tough ones. Dynamo took a tough L, you know, over the weekend. So it's been rough, but you know, there's always the next game. There's always the next day. The gentleman we're bringing on is going to bring us something else to watch. I've got work to do. There's a new sheriff in town. If you want to do that, let's talk UFL.
Let's talk UFL. So I'll give a little introduction. We're going to bring Abdul on. Abdul Memon is covering the UFL, and he has been brought on to talk to us about the Gamblers. For those who don't know, the Gamblers play football in Houston. They did last year. There's been a lot of shuffle around UFL, XFL, Roughnecks, Gamblers. We finally landed on the Gamblers, and Abdul is here to talk to us about it. So without further ado, not to bury the lead, I'm going to go ahead and bring him on. Abdul, how are you doing today?
I'm good. How about you guys?
Doing great. Can't complain. Well, I guess we can complain. There's a lot not going good with Houston sports, but we're hoping that you can tell us right now that the Gamblers are going to win the entire UFL championship.
I did my updated power rankings. I had them at the bottom at eighth, but is a very, there's a lot of parity in this league. So it's very, it can shuffle like throughout this whole like couple of weeks, honestly. So I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be really exciting.
Sweet. Well, I'll start with the questioning here. And this is something that I've thought about. So obviously, like I mentioned when introducing you, there's been a lot of parity in terms of which teams have been playing in Houston and how many leagues there have been outside of the NFL. So can you walk us through this current iteration of football that's not NFL football in Houston? What are we looking at? Because we've had Wade Phillips as a coach, Kevin Sumlin. What team are we looking at right now in the Gamblers?
Yep. So, yeah, it's the Houston Gamblers. Yeah, like you mentioned, Kevin Sumlin was the head coach back in 2022. It was with the USFL. It was different from the XFL because the USFL played in only in Birmingham for one season, and then they had four different markets they played in, and Houston was not one of them. For the first season, Sumlin went 3-7, but it was a really good stats. In the first half, he went 9-1. So he was really good in the first half, but he just didn't close games really well. So if he learned to close games, this team would have been a lot better. But he only coached for one season. Then 2023, it was CJ Johnson. And I believe they went 5-5 in that 2023 USFL season. And then after the USFL season and the XFL 2023 season, they merged. And then the 2023 Roughnecks, they did make the playoffs with Wade Phillips as a head coach, like you mentioned. But they moved Wade Phillips to San Antonio and the whole coaching staff and the roster, which was a very criticized move by like pretty much everyone in the league because he had local roots. His father was a coach of the Oilers. And the team was really good, too, while the Gamblers were 5-5. And then 2024, it went really bad under CJ Johnson. They went 1-9, and then 2020 last season they went 5-5. But the attendance was really bad. It drops in significantly because of, I assume, was because of those coaching change, and then they moved stadiums around too because they had to go to Rice Stadium in 2024, and then back to TDECU last season because there's stadium renovations as well, so that played a factor in it too.
Okay, so we're getting currently the head coach is going to be Kevin Sumlin, right?
Yes, yep. So this season, they so the 2024-2025 UFL season, they were under the Roughnecks branding. They brought in a new investor in Mike Rapoli. He had like fond memories of the USFL, and he wanted to invest in the USFL during like the 2022-2023 season before the merger. And the merger happened, then I think he withheld his investment. That's my guess. So yeah, he changed the whole branding to the Gamblers again, and brought in Kevin Sumlin because he has local ties. He coached at University of Houston, Texas A&M as well, and they are moving to another stadium, Shell Energy Stadium, where the Dynamo play, like you mentioned.
Nice.
Yes, yeah. This was something that Rapoli really wanted to do, is play in smaller venues, like 10,000 to 25,000 seats, and just because a lot of the attendances aren't the greatest right now. So if it's like a 10,000 like attendance like for a game, it doesn't look as bad as if you're in like a 50 to 60,000 seat arena. So he made the right decision. Everyone was really happy about that too.
Yeah, no doubt. All right. Well, I'll turn it over to Tom. I know Tom's got a few questions. What have you got for Abdul here?
So I want to start off with this roster, right? I'm trying to dig into it, trying to understand who I should be looking at, who are names I need to learn, who are guys I need to know. I recently saw there's like a quarterback thing. Can you speak to that? They've got a couple different guys they're going to run out there. I know I saw something like that. Kind of break that down for me. Let me know who's the guy and what are they trying to do, things of that nature.
Yeah, for sure. So for quarterbacks, so I had an article last week called Ask the Experts. So I asked about five other people who cover the league as well as myself. And for me, my most intrigued player was Hunter Deckers, which was the quarterback for the Houston Gamblers. Hunter was on the Saints practice squad for the entire 2025 season. Had no preseason stats, and his last attempted pass was in community college. There's a lot of intrigue for me because I want to see what he does, if he actually earned that practice squad spot. And ironically, in 2023, he was at Iowa State, and then he got in trouble for sports betting, and now he's on the Gamblers, which is a chef's kiss. It's one of the funniest things. A lot of people in Iowa State were laughing at that, and including myself. But for Hunter, he's not going to be the starter. It's going to be Nolan Henderson. Nolan was with the Roughnecks for the last two seasons. He had a couple of starts, and his stats weren't the greatest, but his offensive coordinator for the Gamblers, Eric Price, was with the Roughnecks last year, so there's a lot of familiarity with the offense. So I think they want to give him one more shot, and then give Hunter a couple more weeks to just know the offense, get to know a little bit better, so that way he's more prepared and looks better on the field. And James Larson, who reports about the league really well, he said that Hunter will have a couple of series in the game, so it's not like he's going to be on the bench for the whole game. And then lastly, it was the last most recent signing. It was Taulia Tagovailoa, which is Tua's brother. There was a really odd addition for anyone who covers the leagues, in the professional leagues outside of the NFL, because he did not have great stats in the CFL for only the one season in 2024, and it was limited stats as well. And then in last year, he was in the European League of Football for Hamburg, and his first ever pass was a pick six. So, it was quite the thing to see, because there was a lot of intrigue, a lot of hype, because he was to his brother, and they thought he would ball out there. And he had good stats at Maryland, too. So it didn't really pan out. He only lasted two starts, and then he was in the indoor football league, and he only had played a couple of games, and his stats were really not that great either. So it's more about the familiarity, because Kevin Sumlin was at Maryland for the two of the seasons that Taulia was there. So if he can build back his confidence and all that stuff, then he could probably be a good player. I have my doubts. But he'll be the third string. I doubt he'll have some playing time, unless there's catastrophic injuries to Deckers and Nolan. So I will see him on the field this season.
Okay. So looking this, just zooming out broad strokes, the USFL, it has a similar sort of issues to overcome as any other league that has tried to develop outside of the NFL, which is that when the NFL's not on, there's a lot of fans that just kind of tune out, don't really want to to some extent takes a lot of focus to be a fan at a level, and it feels like a whole nother thing to be involved in a league like this. But my big question for you is, what are some of the differences between the USFL and NFL that would make it more interesting? The one thing that I recall off the top of my head is they go college rule on catches.
Yep.
So it'd be 1 foot required, but what are some of the big differences there?
Yeah, so for the UFL, there's a few different rules. The first one's they have a 60-yard field goal that's worth 4 points as opposed to the 3 points. And then, like you mentioned, the 1 foot inbounds catch. Last year, it was 2 feet. Now it's 1 foot. And then there's no punting when you get to the opponents inside the 50-yard line. So if you're the opposing 49-yard line and it's fourth down, you gotta go for it. It doesn't matter. You can't punt it. You can't pin him down. So there will be a lot of intrigue, a lot more incentivizing of scoring, and there's more action as well. So that'll be a lot of fun. I know there are some coaches that had interviews with different shows. They were joking about if they're at the 40-yard line with 20 seconds left, they're going to try to take a knee and have a 7-yard loss so they can go for the 4-point game-winning field goal down three. So it's going to be, it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to this. There's going to be a lot of different strategies in this league. Another rule is the point after touchdown. It used to be 1 point from the 2-yard line, 2 from the 5, then 3 from the 10. Now it's the regular 1 point from the 33-yard line, in the NFL. And then 2 points is a ball on the 2-yard line, and then 3 points is ball on the 8-yard line. So if it's a 9-point game, it's still a one possession game, even if you're down 9-18. So it's a lot of fun. And then also one thing too is the onside kick rule. It's in the NFL, you see how it's the traditional, you kick it and then like most likely the return team most likely gets it. In the UFL, it's 4th and 12 from the 32-33 yard line. So it's a lot more of an incentive to go for it and actually convert it. So it's a lot more drama, a lot more excitement as opposed to seeing it like a regular onside kick in the NFL where you'll 99.9% the other team gets it.
Yeah, and on top of that, from a broadcast perspective, is it still similar to I want to say it was the XFL, but where they have an in-depth look at like what, like if a play is challenged, they'll give you that in-depth look of like what they're looking at and what they're looking for? Or
yep, correct. Yeah, that's one thing too. Yeah, they there's a super challenge, so you can challenge anything. So yeah, once it's challenged, they go through the whole process. You get to see it. It's a lot more. I forget the word, but you get to like see it. So it's not. Let's say again.
I said parody, but I misunderstood what you said.
I think clarity. I think it's more clarity. So you can just see it. So you can see it, and like you get to see the whole process. And the ACC and college football actually copied what the UFL did. So it's been a very positive experience as a whole for like watching on TV.
And for those that are watching on TV, are there any broadcasters that maybe we're familiar with that are going to be calling games?
Yeah, so Joel Klatt for Fox, he does all the big college football games. He does the UFL. He's been doing it the last couple of years. He does a great job. And then I think Jordan Rogers is doing it for ABC again. I know Joe Tessitore is calling the games for ESPN. He did that last year, and that was a huge like boost. From like a fan perspective of watching the league, because he brings a lot of energy to the games. So he's doing it again. So we're really happy about that.
Nice. Sweet. Tom, I'll turn it over to you.
Let's talk about some other skill positions. Tell me about some of these wide receivers, maybe a tight end or a running back that I need to know. Maybe an edge rusher. Like give me, and I know it's not fair, but you know, give me what you would say would be the equivalent to some of our favorite Texan players. You know, who's their Derek Stingley? Who's their Will Anderson? Who's their, you know, Nico Collins? That sort of thing.
Oh yeah, for sure. So the receiver group's really good. They have Jontre Kirkland. He was with San Antonio last year, and he played really. He didn't have a great season last year, but the year prior he was really good. And they have another receiver called named Jalen Moreno Cropper. He was with the Cowboys for the last couple of seasons, and now he's with the Gamblers. So he's a very intriguing player to watch for the Gamblers this season. And then Justin Hall, he was with Houston last year. He had a really good PFF grade, and he was one of the top like graded wide receivers from last year. So there's a lot of really good receivers. There's two that I'm looking at specifically. It's Luan Winningham and Kai Loxley. They're more the big body receivers, so you can take the top off the field and be more of that vertical threat. So I'm looking forward to seeing those two, because Kirkland and Cropper and Hall, they're not like the biggest receivers at all. So if one of those two can be that big body receiver, then this offense can look a lot more like more efficient and loaded, in my opinion. And then you mentioned the defensive line group. I really like the interior defensive line. Kyron Bars, Israel Antoine, and then Rashard Lawrence. Those three are really, really good. They played really well last season in the UFL. So I'm really looking forward to seeing those three. Their defensive edge group, one name to look at is Malik Fisher. He played for the DC Defenders last season. He had a really good year last year for them. The opposite side, it's kind of a question mark. I have three players. It looks like Christopher Allen's going to be named starter. The depth chart just got released this afternoon. So he's going to be the starter. Kenny Dyson's another person that I'm looking at because he was with the Panthers in 2024 on their practice squad and their active roster, but he got cut in minicamp after the rookie minicamp. So he's trying to get back on the field, try to make a name for himself. So those two guys I'm looking at specifically to be that Robin to the Malik Fisher Batman, in my opinion. And then for cornerback, Damon Arnett, he was with Houston last season in the UFL, but also he was with the Houston Texans practice squad. And he played a couple games in the when he was on the active roster for the Texans last season. and he's back with the Gamblers. So I'm really looking forward to seeing him play, because he was like a former first round pick for the Raiders. So he has a lot of talent, and it shows because he was on an NFL roster last season.
Nice. That's a name I recognize. Damon Arnett. Nice. Mm-hmm. One last thing. I want you to give your pitch. Okay. So like a lot of times, like I would equate it to like soccer fans in the United States, where it's like, you should watch the Dynamo because the MLS is like actually really worthwhile. And like, I know that you think soccer's weird, but like, it's not, it's really fun to watch. And here's why. So like, what's your pitch to those fans that are like, I don't need another team to watch. Like, I'm just kind of over it. I'm not going to be tuning in. Like, what would be your sales pitch to get them to tune in?
Yeah, so for me, it's an overall net positive for the football ecosystem. Like we mentioned with the new rules, like the NFL took the UFL's kickoff. So it's a really good thing to see like new rules being played out in another league, as opposed to just putting it in the NFL and everyone just getting mad. So it's good to see like another kind of like a minor league. But also like there are players that need development and need reps. And a couple examples are Dondre Tillman. He was with the Birmingham Stallions between the 2022 and 2024 season, so 3 seasons of spring football. And now he gets his opportunity with the Broncos, and he's been playing really well. He's been the backup for Nick Benito, which is awesome to see. And he's made plays too, so it's been awesome to see like him performing at a high level when he was in like spring football for 3 seasons. So that's one person. Another person was Jalen Redmond. He was on the Panthers training camp in 2023, and he was an early cut, too. He didn't make it through the whole training camp. He plays in the UFL for the Renegades, and then he had a really great season. Then he got signed with the Vikings. 2024, he played, all the games. And then this most recent season, he was a starter and earned a $1.1 million bonus for his performance. Because he was overperforming his player contract, so because he didn't get like a great contract, because the UFL guys don't really get great contracts, they're just player minimum. So he played like a lot better than what he was getting paid. So it was really awesome to see. And then lastly, I'm a Detroit Lions fan, so I saw this past offseason during like training camp, they signed 8 guys from the UFL that played that most recent season. Two of those guys, Jacob Saylors, he was a starting returner, and he made the team. So it was awesome to see. And then Nick Whiteside, he was on the practice squad, but he did make plays in one game against the Buccaneers on Monday Night Football. It was really cool to see. And it's really vital because Dan Campbell, he wants those guys in those, it's like playing in that league, because it gives them tape. It makes their bodies like fresh, because they're not like just training all day. You're actually getting like hits, like you're actually getting like calluses or like bruises basically. So you're kind of like, you know, like it's a really good thing to see like these coaches and GMs embrace this league from a player development perspective. And it's cool to see like some games where like, oh, that guy can play in the NFL, like Saylors. I saw him like from the past 2 seasons with St. Louis. I'm like, oh, he can play. He's got speed. I can see it. And he got his opportunity in the NFL. Now it's really cool to see. And one more reason too is the cost for NFL games are really expensive. For me, like a Lions game, if you want like a seat in the nosebleeds, it's at least $200. I don't know how much it is for Houston Texans games. I would assume it's probably like $150 or maybe even lower. But yeah, it's really expensive to go to these games, and like parking and all that stuff. Like for UFL tickets, they're most of them are between $20 to $50 a game. So it's really nice to see like a very affordable option, in my opinion. And right now, the sale ends in an hour and a half. It's a 33% off sale. So for the home openers right now. So it was nice to see like another like discount on top of the good deal that you get for tickets. And also, if you want to go to the Houston Gamblers game, it's April 5th, Sunday at 5 p.m. Central Time, and Ludacris is performing at halftime. That's another thing they did. It was for all 8 teams for their home openers, they got like a halftime performance show.
Nice. A lot of good reasons. I especially like the development piece. I think that in the USL obviously wants to develop its own presence and probably doesn't want to tie itself to the NFL, but I think that marketing itself as a developmental league would be really good for its longevity.
Oh yeah, for sure.
And then to speak to your point about like ticket prices, like there's nothing better in my opinion than like go into a minor league baseball game. Like out here, like you could pay like $10 for like right behind home plate. You mm-hmm. don't really care what happens in the game. You're just there for the atmosphere.
And right.
That live sports cheap is always better, I think.
For sure. And you're also in the soccer stadium. So you're not like when you're like in like a, like the nosebleeds, it's not really, you're not that far from the, like from the field. So
Tom would know. He spends every weekend and every Wednesday that he can at Shell Energy Stadium.
Oh, nice.
I'll be there next Saturday. Next Saturday, I believe it's Portland. Maybe it's Seattle. No, it's Seattle. Maybe it's Seattle they're playing. I'd have to go and look. But the Dynamo got a game next Saturday. You're 100% right. There isn't a bad seat in the stadium. I sit somewhere in the middle, and you feel like you're right on top of it. I mean, it's really, you know, like you spoke to, something that's a little bit more closer to the action. It's 100% that. I think it's going to be cool. I know that's not the first time that they've done football in that stadium. Sam Houston State played some games in there last season. And they had pretty good turnouts. And Huntsville, for someone that makes that drive, it's about an hour and a half, 2 hours from Houston. So, to get guys to come down and be able to go pack that stadium is pretty cool. So I think definitely you got to get out and see the Gamblers.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. And they're having giveaways too. So like first 5,000 fans, you get like shirts and stuff. I know the last game is a Jim Kelly bobblehead because he played in the like original USFL in the 1980s. So having like an NFL legend bobblehead from a league that's like 40 years old, it's kind of pretty cool to me. It's kind of a cool collectible. So,
yeah, sounds really cool. Well, Abdul, thanks for joining us today to talk about the USL.
UFL.
UFL.
Yeah.
I lost the letter there for a second.
No, you're good. You're good.
thanks for joining us to talk about the UFL. We appreciate your time. Can you let the good folks at home know where they can find you so they can follow along throughout this coming season?
Yep. So Twitter, Abdul Memon Foot, and then the Abdul Memon Football is the Substack. Game previews, I did one for this Tuesday. They usually come out on Fridays, but I want to get ahead of it early. And then game recaps will be on Tuesday. So previews Friday, except for 1 week because there's a Thursday night game. But and then Tuesdays are going to be the game recaps.
Sweet. Well, thanks for being on the show. We appreciate your time. And all right.
Oh, yeah, no problem. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Appreciate you, sir. All
right. Thank you.
In business, there's no room for guesswork. Every shipment matters. Every deadline counts. When you're trying to keep operations running smoothly, the last thing you need is uncertainty. That's why reliability is at the core of USPS Ground Advantage. From the moment your package is first scanned in, it moves through a secure nationwide network, aiding in a timely and accurate delivery. You get near real-time tracking so you can keep up with your shipments. And with affordable upfront pricing, there are no hidden fees or surprise surcharges to throw off your cost sheets. It all adds up to predictable deliveries you can depend on. Because knowing your logistics are handled lets you focus on everything else: your customers, your team, and the future you're building. Visit usps.com/groundadvantage to start shipping with confidence. USPS, official shipping sponsor of the NHL.
All right. Thank you, Abdul, for coming on the show. Appreciate it. Now, let's talk Texans. Let's do it. I don't know what we call our bit at the beginning of the show where we talk about teams that are in Houston that aren't the Texans. But we ran a little long today on it because we had a special guest. So fun, always fun to do it. And I love talking about just about any Houston sports team. So we'll have one more here in the near future with the Connecticut Sun are getting moved to Houston. That's at least in the works.
That was really?
The rumor. Ooh. Yeah. And they're going to I believe they're moving them down there to revive the Comets. So
yes,
that'll be
the other thing we definitely got to talk about, which obviously not today because we've got all this other. The Houston's getting hockey. We're getting a hockey team. So the Houston Bulls are going to be a thing.
When did that happen? What league is that? AHL?
It's I think so. It's minor league. But I can't remember where they're getting moved down from. They're going to be in the Richmond Rosenberg area, which it's a little south of Houston. But I mean, it's hockey. I think it's a bull. Sign me up. I need a sweater yesterday.
Dude, hockey at any level is fun, especially live. Like, people always make that joke, you know, I went to go see a fight and ended up watching a hockey game, but like, hey, there didn't even need to be a fight. Like, a minor league team, a professional team doesn't matter. Like, hockey is always fun live. Granted, a lot of the minor league teams will charge the same price for the merch as the, you know, NHL teams, but that's neither here nor there. The Houston Bulls, that sounds like a pretty solid name. I don't hate it. It would be one of the few teams in Houston that's not themed after space, so be interesting to see. But let's talk Texans. So last we left you was 2 weeks ago. The Texans, there were still a lot of questions around what the Texans were going to do to address the offensive line, what we should expect. I was literally at the rodeo when the news broke that Wyatt Teller signed with the Texans. So it was a good night. That was the same night. And also ran into Jalen Petrie that night at the rodeo. And by ran into Jalen Petrie, I mean, I was standing there waiting for my wife to finish. She was changing our kid in the restroom. I was standing there with my parents and I looked in the concourse and I just saw Jalen Petrie and I was like, oh, look, that's Jalen Petrie. And I went over, I tried to be respectful. I looked like he was on a date or something. I didn't want to like ruin his night or like draw too much attention to it. And I even waited till the next day to post about it. I was like so conscious about like trying to be discreet and everything, but it was fun. Getting to see him, he's a chill guy. He took it all in stride. He didn't seem very mad about it, which is more than I can say for some, you know, ultra famous people. There are plenty of people that are the best at their position in the NFL that probably would have told me to go somewhere. So I can't think of any of them being on the Texans, but anyways. So it's been a fun time and there was a lot that happened in this 1 week that we took off. I literally was like at the rodeo, like, oh, perfect. Wyatt Teller signs with the Texans the 1 week we're not having a show. That's great. But it's happened. So let's talk about that first. How do you feel about the Wyatt Teller move?
Before we get to that, I need to go back to the Jalen Petrie thing because
I knew you were going to do that.
James texts me and goes, look at this. And it's him and it's in a picture with Jalen Petrie. The first thing out of my mind was, well, did you apologize to him because you are the ultimate Jalen Petrie apologist?
And he goes, top of the list of people I owe an apology to. And I had the opportunity in person to do it. And I didn't do it. I was trying, if that conversation would have drawn too much attention to the interaction.
Probably. But
Jalen, if you see this, I'm very sorry for the way I talked to you after your sophomore season.
Somebody who's been a ride or die Jalen Petrie guy, I feel like it's my job to make sure to remind him. There was a moment in time when you were not a fan, but we're here now, and I love it.
To be fair, I wanted him to be good. I just felt like he, and you know what happened between his second season and third season was D'Amico Ryan. So, I mean.
Fair.
Fair. But I mean, it doesn't matter how it happened. There is that apology owed. And up next, I'm going to run into Dalton Schultz and I'll need to apologize to him for the way I talked to him after his second season. I should just start a rule now where when a player has a poor second season in Houston, I just don't talk about it.
Let it go.
No, you can't just let it go.
So now that I've gotten that out of the way, I too must apologize because as soon as I saw the signing, and I can't remember. I think it's Moore is his last name. The guy from Arizona, the other
Brown.
As soon as Evan Brown was signed, I tweeted out, and that is the end of the Wyatt Teller to Houston saga. And lo and behold, I was absolutely wrong. I thought for sure there's no way the Texans would spend more money on the line when they had all these draft picks and they had addressed all these other positions, done such a great job in the offseason. And all they did was say, Tom, you must shut up because we're not done here. And they go out and they get a great piece who's already, you know, said they're going to move him from his natural position back to a position that, you know, he knows he can play, which I think is great. The fact that the line is starting to come together where you're going to have pieces everywhere. It's just a huge move. You're seeing a lot of people start to see, hey, the Texans did a really good job upgrading this offensive line. And that was like the biggest glaring weakness. So it's going to be really tough. There's so many podcasts out there that have talked to it where they're like, look, if this defense stays healthy, the offense just doesn't have to screw it up. So, and now I think they're in a really good position with the moves that they've made this offseason to be really good on offense, and at a minimum, be good enough on offense to be able to do what we hope they do next season.
Exactly. I think you captured a lot of it. To me, the talking point around Wyatt Teller has been, would be nice, not necessarily the most, you know, like 100%, if this doesn't happen, I'm out on the Texans this year. But I like the move. It certainly affects the way you view the draft. And in that way, I think you're left in a position where you expect Teller to be the starter and you expect Ingram to be the starter. So now I wouldn't say that guard is not a need for the Texans, but I would say that they can play it differently because they have their expected starters on the roster right now. So it's to me, the philosophy remains the same. You want a high potential guard. I'm looking at my favorite pick right now for the Texans is at 69 to take Keelan Rutledge around that range or trade back. I think he's projecting around 80, but this is a guy who played at Georgia Tech, fits the gap scheme, is viewed very heavily around, you know, most circles as a starter at the next level. But is not projecting with a very high draft pick. I think it's easier to justify the value. Like, if we look at who Nick Caserio is, the value in this draft is at defensive positions early and offense later, with the exception of tackle. I think, and Caden Proctor's been heavily connected to the Texans at the 28 pick. There is some decent offensive linemen, but I think you set yourself up in a position where Caserio can do what he does and go, who is bringing me the most value at wherever I'm picking. And obviously sometimes he goes with his guy. We've had that discussion before, but he's in a position where it gives a lot more flexibility. I think my last two or three mock drafts, I haven't taken an offensive player before pick 59, like gone double defense early, because I think that this move sets that up. Now, to speak to Wyatt Teller, moving to left guard is a little bit concerning because that was the last time he was bad at guard early in his career, was when he played left guard. The move to right guard was something that really helped him become the Wyatt Teller that we know today. He seems confident that he can make the switch. I think maybe it's a coaching thing. Maybe there's a lot of factors that go into that. If we look at his general grading, up until 2023, he was grading out as like top five guard on PFF and was looking really good. Even over the past two seasons, he's graded out middle ground 32. There's 64 starting guards in the NFL. If we're looking at just like at the start of the season, 64 guys take the field as the starter. And so if you're ranking out as 32, you're basically the best. You're the best of the starters, of the guys, like, but you're still maybe a little lower than you should be. So Wyatt Teller's lower level of play in 2024 and 2025 could be attributed to being on the Cleveland Browns when they went from 2023 being a playoff team that looked really good to getting mollywopped by the Texans and then sent into absolute obscurity for two seasons where just nothing seemed to go right for the Browns. And I could imagine that in such a mental game that it would be very troublesome to try and motivate yourself to go out there and give it all when all you're doing is risking being injured on a team that has no shot at the playoffs and no hope of being anything more than a team that has to play games so that other teams can decide where they land in the playoffs. So I think that from that perspective, it's easy to be excited about this signing because the coaching on the Texans has improved over the past two seasons. We've seen improvements along the offensive line. So there's reason to believe. And Wyatt Teller specifically called out that he's excited to work with Cole Popovich. So how's that for the reputation we've talked about Cole Popovich having? There's guys coming in that specifically are calling him out. There was the story about how CJ specifically called up Wyatt Teller and did a little recruiting work. How much sway do you think that had in this move for the Texans?
I don't think it was a call. The way I read it, they were at like a Christian conference or something like that. And they face to face. And he was like, basically, I would love for you to block for me. So when you have that interaction where it's, you know, it's man to man, it's not a text, it's not a social media thing. I think that's awesome. I love, you know, if you saw when he got signed, you saw the social media thing, he immediately went and embraced the whole Texan culture, boots on, George Strait in the background, a whiskey in hand. I was like, yo, that's Texan all stinking day. So for me, I love it. You spoke to the draft. You spoke to, you know, them not necessarily being out on guard. I think you're 100% right. But I what the phrase that pays and the best teams, PBA, best player available, BPA. I'm sorry, I got it backwards. Best player available. Best player available. They're going to be able to do that. You named Keelan Rutledge. I want Jennings Dunker. I want him for the moxie. I want him for the aura, as the kids say. Like, I believe that dude will be able to slowly develop into whatever you want him to be, and he'll be great. And for me, they can move back and get him. You know, they can move around. You know, Casero's going to move around anyway. Any draft pick, any mock that you do with the draft picks now, it's very unlikely that those are going to be his picks. Maybe one of them will, but you know, one of them won't. Brandon said the mullet. Yes, that is a very majestic piece of lettuce that he's rocking right there with the stash. I mean, I don't know if y'all saw the thing, the Pat McAfee show where they're like, look at this guy. And there's like this meme or whatever, where it's got like an eagle in the background, Freebirds playing. And you know, it's just like, you know, he's that guy. So for me, they said, if you were going to build an offensive lineman in a lab, that's how you would build him. So I hope the Texans go get him. And if he's a swing tackle, cool. If he's a swing guard, cool. Swiss Army knife, I'm cool with that too. This offensive line, I think, for the first time in a long time, I know James has said famously that Nick Casario may not be the guy to build the offensive line for the Texans. I think he did a pretty damn good job.
I think he did. I mean, that's add that to the list of people I owe an apology to. We're building it. We're working on that. But I agree. Jennings Dunker is great, and I think the Texans have shown that that's like prototypically the kind of offensive lineman they like. They literally picked up Braden Smith, who played guard in college, kind of did the opposite of what people usually do and went from guard to tackle. So he has that flexibility both ways. Jennings would be a great pickup. The one thing that has come up about Iowa offensive linemen since the draft process started. Like, I do think that, you know, that offensive line being picked as the best offensive line in college is a huge thing. They all are skilled. The problem, I think, becomes that their scheme fit relative to what the Texans do, which is something that can usually be overcome. Some guys are just destined to be only good for blocking, like in a zone scheme, whereas some are only good in gap. But there is that possibility that they like Jennings Dunker as that guy. But a lot of the guys they've been tied to are better in the gap scheme. And that's why, like, a Keelan Rutledge or other guys that I've kind of aligned with to try and pick for the Texans grade out better as gap blockers. But I like Jennings Dunker's general personality and like the way he carries himself. I think that's like someone you'd be hard. You'd be like, well, he grades out a little low at gap blocking. It's like, okay, but he grades out really high at like swarm. So like, what more do you need from the guy?
He's Kamari Lassiter on the line. Everybody dogged him because he couldn't run his 40. His 40 was slow. And they said, nope, just give me a dog. Just give me a dude that just wants it more than the next guy. Jennings Dunker looks like that. I think a line with Braden Smith, Jennings Dunker, and Wyatt Teller at some point in time would just be a nasty front. They're not trying to give you an inch.
Now, we've talked about the draft in general and I've kind of alluded to it, or at least directly talked about it, but how do you think the signing of Wyatt Teller and what the Texans have done with offensive line affects the way they go about it? You talk about best player available, but like, how do you feel? Cause I know a lot of people would be frustrated by it if it happens, but like, if the Texans didn't move from 28 and 38 and the picks were like insert defensive tackle here, we can talk about, Brandon brought up Caleb Banks and his foot injury, which has clouded the judgment on that. I've done a lot of research into defensive tackles, and I've kind of landed on Christian Miller due to his mix of age, power, where he fits for this Texans team. But if they went like interior defensive lineman and linebacker in some mix, whether it's Anthony Hill, Jacob Rodriguez, some mixture of linebacker and defensive tackle, how would you feel about that, knowing that even with what they've done along the offensive line, you could still count most of that as a need?
To me, I feel like they've done so much in free agency that there's really not one draft pick that they could make that I would go, oh no, we don't need that. Oh no, you can't pick that guy. Like there's just really not a whole lot of holes that I feel like they haven't answered. Like that I feel like a draft pick has to go that way. Yeah, you could say they need, you know, a developmental guy for the line. You could say they need a developmental guy for the defensive line. But if that's not there and you're looking at this team as a win now team, you start to go, okay, edge, I could use another edge rusher, you know, a young guy to spell, you know, D Hunter, or, you know, I need another linebacker, somebody that plays coverage better or something, you know, somebody that if Jalen Petrie went down, I'd be able to slot him in that star nickel role. Like, we don't look at those as needs, but if they went out and got them in at 28 or 38, or if they went up to go get somebody, I mean, I don't know that I would be upset. I think there's always going to be people you're not going to please. But for me, there's just not a whole lot of things where I'm going, if the Texans don't get this in the draft, it's going to be a problem come week one. I'll pose the question to you. Is there a position that you feel like if they don't address it in the draft, it's going to be a problem week one based on what they have right now?
I mean, the only ones that I can think of are all defensive, is the thing. And here's the thought process. Some of these might be surprising. Most of them probably won't. But linebacker, right now you've got Azeez Al-Shaair and Henry Toa-Toa. That is a position where in the past we've been concerned with depth, but this is a Texans team that has pretty consistently only trotted out two linebackers for most snaps. So you really only need two quality guys. So this is one where I would expect a higher pick. I would expect them to go for a guy that they think can take that snap share. That or they have a lot of confidence in Henry Toa-Toa. Defensive tackle and edge are the other two. And the reason for that is we don't have Derek Barnett under contract. He took up 350 snaps last season. As much as people talk about how great Will Anderson and Danielle Hunter are, they play, relative to the rest of the league, they play a relatively low snap share because there's that depth there where the Texans can give them that rest so that they're at the best that they can be when they're on the field. And so I think that a name that's come up is, I believe it's Zion Young. I could be wrong on the last name or the first name, but he's a Missouri defensive end. I could be wrong on a lot of things, but he's a Missouri defensive end who slots in really well if he falls like in the second round. I think there's a lot of reason to believe the Texans could go edge early. There would be some people that are mad about it because they're like, we don't need a starting edge. And it's like, no, you don't understand. It's just like the interior defensive line, literally such a rotational position that even like the interior defensive line as it stands brings back a lot of the guys from last year, but you still want that young guy who can rotate in, take a significant amount. Like people are like, well, we've got Tommy Togiai and Sheldon Rankins. It's like, yeah, cool. But like, you know how much help Christian Miller would be? The teams eat when they, you know, fill out not only the starters along their interior offensive and defensive line, but the depth, especially on the defensive side, the depth piece. So I think that the signing of Wyatt Teller makes it to where it would be significantly less, really not frustrating at all if the Texans decided to go guard later. I think it gives you the opportunity to go with a guy that you can develop. And I think it sets you up to do what Nick Cassirer, I think each offseason has done it this way, where he set himself up to be able to make those kind of moves in his mind, where he's like, I will get the best player available and I won't think about need because I used free agency to set that up. But like, this is the first time in the past, like, you know, last two off seasons, I don't think he really did an excellent job of doing that. He just kind of did it and went for it. Whereas this off season, it feels like Nick Cassirer has truly done everything he can in free agency to set himself up to literally not have to care about need with his premium picks, which is a beautiful thing. That's how Super Bowl winning teams function. That's how a consistent elite teams function, is at best player available. But they don't just function at best player available because that's how they function. They do it because they've set up their roster to where they can go best player available, and it's not to the detriment of another position that needs it. So this is the first offseason I feel like where Nick Cassirer has 100% done that. And maybe that was what was missing and why I felt bad about his offensive line addressing, is that he's going for best player available every time, but he hadn't set himself up to do that. So, oh, Georgia, man, if we could get, that's why I love Christian Miller, or just a, you know, a Georgia interior defensive lineman. That's just the formula for success, as we've seen in the past. But yeah, I feel really good about it. With that, there has been a lot that's gone down, but that's really the most notable conversation topic that we have. And we'll have all offseason to talk. We didn't pull out any mock drafts today. We had our special guest, Abdul, talk about the UFL, but next week we'll be back into our normal schedule. But Tom, do you have any final thoughts before we kind of bring this thing to a close?
Just I really appreciate Abdul for coming on. I thought that was really dope. Love talking, you know, UFL, really going to love talking, you know, all the different sports, you know, in a little bit, you know, not, so it's not all Texan all the time. Doesn't mean I'm not here for all the Texan talk. It's just, you know, it's nice to be able to have those other sports, you know, to kind of bounce around a little bit. Cause I feel like a lot of fans watch a little bit of everything. I don't think I'm the only guy that's just on everything Houston sports. But I'm really excited for the season. It's going to be a lot of, all right, when's training camp? All right, when's preseason? I need the regular season tomorrow. Like we're in this, I don't want to say golden age, cause I, you know, that's an Astro thing, but we're in this nice sweet spot with the Texans where I think for the next 4 or 5 years, you really are going to have a window where they're going to be very good every year. And they're going to be have a seat at the table. Like, all right, the Texans are a team that if things go their way, they can be at the AFC Championship team. They're going to be a team. They're going to be on the short list of odds for a Super Bowl, you know, because of the roster, the work that Nick Casario's done. And just, you know, I really feel like the culture that D'Amico's created is getting some of these guys to okay, I'm Ed Ingram. We didn't talk about him, but I think he turned down money to stay here, and he spoke to it where it was basically like, I could have went somewhere else. And, you know, that might not have been a good environment. You know, it might not have worked out for me to get the best out of my game. And that's not something that we're used to seeing from a Houston Texan football team where guys are like trying to get there or guys are willing to take less to stay. So for me, that's just really exciting as a fan, because you feel like they're going to figure it out. If they're missing something, Casario will go get it. If there's a maturity thing, they'll squash it. Like where you look at some of the other teams in Houston and you question age and you question maturity and you question, you know, whether they can get stuff done. I really feel like there's not a lot of questions anymore, other than for them to put it on the field. Yeah, people are going to question CJ Stroud. You hear everyone talking about, don't worry about CJ Stroud. Now they went out and got some protection for him. I'm just ready to get it going.
Couldn't agree more. Couldn't agree more. With my final thoughts, I'd like to shout out Brandon Halam for being so active in the chat. This week, I was able to figure out how to get the chat on the screen, so I wasn't putting them up, but we were definitely reading all of your comments, and we appreciate you for that. As always, thank you for watching The Bullpen. I have been James Roy, and you can find me at James Roy NFL wherever you get your social media. Tom is TC Tom1 on Instagram and Third Coast Tom on Twitter. And we are The Bullpen, the number one veteran run Texans podcast in the entire universe. So make sure you are subscribed wherever you get your podcasts. And this audio will be available the following day, as is usually the case. So if you are tuning in on video and you missed most of it, you can always listen tomorrow if you would like, or you can watch it on YouTube. So thank you for tuning in. As always, stay classy, Houston, and vamos Texans. Thanks for tuning in to The Bullpen, a Texans podcast. Please like, comment, subscribe, and follow along for more Texans talk from The Bullpen.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
In business, there's no room for guesswork. Every shipment matters. Every deadline counts. When you're trying to keep operations running smoothly, the last thing you need is uncertainty. That's why reliability is at the core of USPS Ground Advantage. From the moment your package is first scanned in, it moves through a secure nationwide network, aiding in a timely and accurate delivery. You get near real-time tracking so you can keep up with your shipments. And with affordable upfront pricing, there are no hidden fees or surprise surcharges to throw off your cost sheets. It all adds up to predictable deliveries you can depend on. Because knowing your logistics are handled lets you focus on everything else: your customers, your team, and the future you're building. Visit usps.com/groundadvantage to start shipping with confidence. USPS, official shipping sponsor of the NHL.